Hello, this is Nan. Hello.
Hey, this is Joanne.
Hey, Joanne. And was that Liz there too?
I don't know.
Liz, oh, so it was just you, Joanne?
Maybe. I know Liz was having trouble last week with people hearing her.
Oh, okay. I just wasn't sure because I didn't catch your name when you checked in, and there was a bit of a glitch, so I wasn't sure whether I heard one of you or two of you.
Right.
So
no, I think
like
that was me.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought I was late. Look at me, not late.
Well, I know you're the first to arrive, and actually Malia, Angelini, and Tom have all messaged me. They've all got different things going on, and so they're not able to make it. So it's you, Liz, and Donna today, hopefully.
Okay. Yeah. So it was kind of fun. I'll update you that last night Liz and I were able to connect with, and I've learned how to say her name, Shalini, maybe? We'll ask Liz.
Okay.
Shalini, also known as Shalini.
Shalini.
In India, and it was super fun. We talked for like 45 minutes. It was her 7 a.m. and our 8:30 p.m. And really, really nice to connect with her.
Oh, that's great. So
yeah.
Were you able to reach through the computer then so you didn't have to charge any long distance?
Yeah, Liz set us up a Zoom call, and we just
did
a Zoom call. Yeah,
oh, you did a Zoom call. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, we even saw each other's faces. So.
Yeah. I heard somebody checking in, I think. I heard a beep.
Yeah, so this is Donna. Hi, I apologize.
Hey, Donna.
I'm not until now, but thank you.
Hello. Oh, this is Nan, and Joanne's here with us. Tom, Shalina, and Malia are not able to make it today. So hopefully Liz will be joining us soon. I know.
Hi,
I think that might be Liz.
Is it Liz? Hi, everyone.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. Sorry, I'm running late.
Great, that's okay. Donna and Joanne are both on the call, and it's just going to be the four of us today. The other three are unable to make it. So
that's too bad.
So it's just us, yeah. Well, I hope that you've all had a good week. Certainly I sent you enough material to keep you going for a while.
The material is great that you sent. Thank you so much. Talk about over-delivering. But I'm soaking it all in, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, that's great. Oh, you're welcome. So which of the three exercises, I gave you the SWOT analysis or doing a mind map or a vision board, which did you all choose to do?
So this is Liz. I probably got most excited about the vision board. I am definitely not finished
I understand.
Yeah, it feels like a really big project to me somehow, and just I think is promoting a lot of really terrific reflections for me. I made something, but I shared it actually. We had our buddy check-in last night. Joanne and Shalini and I, which was lovely. So I shared what I had with the two of them, but I definitely still want more time to sort of sit with this, and I suspect that as we perhaps work through some of the other material, that I'll be coming back to this a little bit.
Yes, it's funny. It's kind of like, I guess with anything, you don't know what you don't know, and so as you hear about future possibilities and other people's ideas, then you're able to say, oh, I think I might want to add to that a little bit and change it. Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of an organic an organically growing kind of document, I think. So you're doing yours hard copy, are you, with you're not doing a computer rendition of one?
I have been doing it on the computer, actually. It's
oh,
so
you
funny
have?
Because
oh, great.
Originally, I really was excited about the idea of making an actual board, and I think that I probably will ultimately make that because I just think there's something nice about it being a little bit more tactile and physical.
Mm-hmm.
But I sort of realized when I started this project that, you know, the last time I did anything like this, we had, like, magazines around, and we're just in a slightly different reality, and it feels a bit more overwhelming to me to make it now. And so I actually tried using that Canva site that you had written about that, and so I played around with that, and I'm pretty happy with what I was able to do in that. Again, I do think that at some point I'll make it into the physical board, because I especially mm-hmm. like the idea of putting it up in my space somewhere so
yeah.
that I'm looking at it regularly. I did find some really nice images on Canva. I don't know if I'm even saying that right. I've never used that site before.
Yeah, I think that's how I pronounce it. I think so. What about you, Joanne or Donna? Which did you choose to do?
This is
so,
Donna.
Oh, go ahead, Donna.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead,
I heard Donna first, so okay.
Tag on
go ahead, Donna.
Okay. Thank you, Joanne. So, Liz, I just wanted to comment on your thing with Canva. I had done a different class, totally unrelated, probably about 6 months ago, and I used Canva for the first time to do a vision board.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I didn't do that just a suggestion for you is that you can save it and send it like through Vistaprint to get it printed, and then you have something physical. And I didn't think of doing that then, and I wish I would have. And then you could get something physical, and then even add, like, you know, words on top of it or, you know, add to it to make it something physical, and then maybe, like I said, add to the top of it. And I'm thinking that that's what I'm going to do, so I'm glad. Thank you for sharing yours, because that's what I think I'm going to do, start out with something like that and then save it and then add to it. So, but to answer the question, I tried that mind mapping. And so I watched some videos on YouTube and, you know, because I feel like there's so much going on with me career-wise. I was trying to
mm-hmm.
focus just on the area of career. And so I could, like, snapshot my picture. It's awful, but at least it was something. So I did a handwritten one. I tried some of these free programs, and I found that, you know what, I'm just going to take a big piece of paper and just write ideal career in the middle and then branch off from it. But it did do for me, like, what I understand maybe some of the benefits of mind mapping is I started to see some areas that were related so I could, like, intersect them. So I did do that exercise, and I plan on doing it again. I think it was just that my expectation was, you know, to do something, get it done, and be so, you know, and mine's just a mess. But that's okay, because I have all the stuff going on career-wise, which sort of helped sort of make me understand maybe why I can't get that vision of
yeah.
what I would want to put on that vision board. I know how I want to feel in that job. I know how I want to feel in the career. So I'm trying to think about that and then doing the reading, you know, from your, I guess, the lesson. And
mm-hmm.
I had actually two sessions with, like, coaches since I'm getting my coaching certificate. I had one with one person, one with another, just focused on this as a topic area for myself and trying to, like, just brainstorm and get a vision of what I want, I guess, in the area of career, what I want it to feel like. So I guess that's part of my process. So I don't have a board yet, but what
yeah.
was great about it is having this class, knowing to check in today, and, you know, it helped me identify areas that I still need to kind of work through. But I know what the goal is. You know, my goal is to have a great vision board that reflects what I want my purpose to be, if that's, you know, even if it's more related to, say, my income or my work or my career, and there may be other areas, of course, that are connected to that, but that's what my focus is. So I know that's a big mouthful, but I didn't do the SWOT. Oh, no, I guess I did do the SWOT, but that was kind of simple. It was like that. That's what I did before I did the mind mapping, meaning simple, but that was, wow, no wonder I'm in a little, I don't want to say chaos, but no wonder there's a lot going on, because I don't want to keep reiterating what I know. And so, you know, thinking a lot more about how those thoughts turn into something, I want to, you know, having those thoughts down and then, I don't want to say changing them, but finding a way to switch them. So, for example, I wrote to my buddy, which is Malia, and she had a rough week. I don't know if she's going to share. I know she's going to listen to the recording, but she had a tree fall through her home.
I mean,
talk about life-changing. I mean, you know, chaotic tragedy. I mean, everybody's okay, so that's good, but she had that happen. But we've still been connecting. She's been great reaching out, and I reached out to her and just to kind of start some of that brainstorming. But I think having the accountability of the group and the class and moving, well, it really definitely helped me this weekend move through this, knowing that we were going to have class today. And that's really very helpful to me.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting. I learned about mind mapping way back in the, I think it was probably in the early 90s. And I took a course in it, and the instructor invited us to write down whatever we could think of about the word table. And so I think, you know, we each had probably 10 or 12 words, something like that. And then he said, now I want you to think about all of the things that a table can be made from, and think about all of the things that you can do when you sit at a table, and all of the things that can go under a table, and all of the uses that you have for tables, and all of the different kinds of tables that there are, and all of the things that can be put on a table. And, oh, my God, it just went on and on and on. And then he said, now I want you to write out as many words as you can think of about a table. And I think we each had like 30 or 40 after that, you know. It's amazing how it just helps you to open up your mind and think about everything that's connected to one word. And I love that you're focused on feelings, Donna. I think that's really important, is, you know, how do I want to feel when I'm in a career that I love? You know, how do I want to feel about my work, or a career that's fulfilling, or a career that's trying to think of another, that's bringing in really good money, you know, that's successful financially. And so when you start putting all of those different words and connecting them to career, then it really does make you think in different ways. I think that was brilliant. Good for you. Joanne, what about you? What was your experience?
So I am the student who did not get her homework done.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to put you.
No. I actually would love to share a little bit, because I'm not feeling bad about it. I'm just feeling realistic about it. But this has been really helpful to me. First of all, I was kind of blown away by Liz's vision board, just because it's amazing what an image can say.
And in thinking it through, like what I want to get out of the exercise, I think I'm really fascinated by this idea of mind mapping, but I'm actually going to start with a vision board. And the reason is that, like the place I am in my life and the place I want to go with this course is to sort of map out my next step, right? My next part.
Uh-huh.
And I uh-huh. think for me to kind of be able to visualize all those pieces is going to, it's going to be exciting. Although I still am going to read about mind mapping because I've never even read about it. So I think I might try that at some point as well. But, and similar to, I think similar to Liz, or whoever said it, that I think this will be, evolving through the course
mm-hmm.
anyway. So I'm not feeling, I think things will trigger me to be like, oh, well, let me add that. That's right. I feel like I forget sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
Like when we were talking last night on our buddy call, Shalini mentioned meditation. And I was like, oh my goodness, I did like this huge meditation course years ago and I've always said I wanted to do it again, but I'd kind of forgotten, right? So I just want to like, I think it'll mm-hmm. be really great to be reminded of those things that are important to me.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? I said too when I sent all this stuff out to all of you is that it's not necessarily the intention that you have everything completed by the end of the course as long as you have the tools and you've got, you know, the accountability partners and you've got the place, you know, on the Facebook page where you can continue to share with one another as you learn and grow. And, you know, even though you don't have a vision at this point, any of you, we'll just keep peeling back the layers of the onion. And as, you know, as we work through the course, and I think the vision is your destination. And some of you just might not have uncovered that destination yet. And so when the time is right, you'll know it. And that's what I love about this course, I think, is just this journey of self-discovery and self-awareness is such an important one because, you know, without that unveiling of self-awareness, we really can't make transformational change. So this is kind of the first step. And each week as we go, we're going to be leveraging, you know, one step, helping the other to get you further and further and closer to your eventual discovery, I guess. And hopefully it will be a meaningful one. So did you get a chance to take a look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs? Some of you might have been familiar with it already. And certainly at the base of the pyramid is, you know, the very basic needs. And then as we mature through life and as we begin to acquire more of those things that we need in order to progress through life and be successful at life. And it was interesting, the whole reason this course began was a friend of mine had read an article and it was about is there another level now to the peak of Maslow's hierarchy in that is self-actualization really the tip of the pyramid or should there be one other level and that is protecting the vulnerable? And so it was funny because my friend said to me, he said, you should do a course on that. And so the more I got thinking about it, the more sense that it made. And, you know, how Maslow's hierarchy of needs is really relevant to life purpose. That, you know, we create this vision of a purposeful life that's based on a strong value system, and then we can design the goals and the strategies and the activities that are going to influence others' lives as well as our own. And to me, it makes good sense to add that additional layer of development. When we live purposefully, we create visions and plans that leave legacies, and those legacies can be financial, physical, philosophical. And I think, you know, they touch individuals and groups in the different communities in our lives at different levels. So what are your thoughts about the need for a new level of responsibility for the human race, if you will? You know, we often talk about the 1% and how, you know, they control all the wealth in the world. Any thoughts?
You know, Nan, I can't help but think, you know, it being today and having just recognized Martin Luther King Day as you were speaking, I couldn't help but think about that quote, and I just went and pulled it up because I think it's such a wonderful quote from him. Where he said, in a real sense, all life is interrelated, all men are caught, and women, but that's fine, all men are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny, whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. And I think it's so interesting that you're speaking to this, you know, having just recognized that day, and that day, at least to me, feeling particularly important right now in the U.S. And I think that so many of us are feeling that. I know I'm feeling that very deeply, this sense that, you know, we can't deny. I think COVID has really brought that home for all of us, right? Like realizing how tied up we all are. And you know, it's interesting, on my vision board as it exists right now, one of the pictures that really resonated for me and that I put in the top corner, actually, is of a person. They're kind of like on like a rock cliff or something, and they're kind of like holding their arm out to another person to kind of help them up. And that picture, it's funny because I started just looking for pictures that would somehow speak to the concept of friendship. And then when I saw this picture, it felt like much more than just friendship. It was also kind of showing a concept of like empowering and bringing other people along. And that feels like a really important concept to me. And I think fits a lot with what you're speaking to in terms of this hierarchy of needs. And, you know, as we have more, whatever that is, more opportunity, more ability to self-actualize, all of it, then I think that brings with it that desire to also bring others along with you.
Yes. I love that. So it applies to the broader community where we're giving one another a hand up. Anyone else have anything to add to that?
Yeah. This is Joanne, and I think sort of adding on to what was said, some of the work that I am doing now and several of my other friends are doing in different areas is working with like sort of impacted people and figuring out a way where you are pulling them up, but you're also putting them in front, right? So they are making their own choices and with their own voice. And it sort of feels like it's in that area now. Like I've had a great life, right? So, you know, the sort of Kennedy idea, like, to those who much is given, much is expected, you know, I see that as all related. And but for that, people are starting to realize and understand, like, we have to empower people as opposed to doing things for them. So I don't know if that's making sense or not, but
yeah,
it's in agreement with you.
Yeah, I think so too. We have a bit of an echo on this line, don't we? It's frustrating.
No. Yeah. I'll mute when I'm not talking.
I don't know that it's you. It's just I've just noticed it. And you know, especially, I don't intend to get political or anything, but these last 4 years, I think, have just highlighted more than anything, how necessary that is for us to have a sustainable society. You can't have the light without the dark, and so we need that, maybe we need that comparison to just cement it for us that our communal values and ethics and integrity and legacy, that it's so valuable, not just to one of us or two of us, to all of us, that we can't survive as a society unless we care about and for one another. So, moving on to values and value system definitions, I think our values reflect our core beliefs that guide our decisions and actions. And our ethics is that standard of moral conduct. And so when we have a code of ethics or ethos, it's a set of rules that decide our actions. And our integrity is something that we can be proud of as an individual, as a community, as a nation, globally, and then provide a legacy that we want to make sure that we leave the world a better place for generations to come, that we are only the caregivers for a minute in the life of humankind. So what do you think is important about having a personal value statement? Anyone?
This is Donna. I feel like it will help me to have a more grounded direction or view, I guess, of what I value. If it, there's a few that come to mind. Security is very important. Freedom is very important to me. And there's reasons why those two things are. So I think of a statement that puts it together. I feel like it will help me be more organized in the way that I move forward. And maybe as simple as just knowing what I stand for. So if there's something that I'm being asked to help with or participate in, if it doesn't go along with that, well, I definitely know I wouldn't participate in it if it was against it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it helps you to know yourself more, to know maybe what to do more of, what to say yes to, what to say no to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. It really does drive, you know, rather than just doing things automatically, doesn't it?
Yes, I'm just unmuted.
Mm-hmm. So,
Nana, I was, oh.
Yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just trying to make sure you had finished, but I also think that the reality is that there often are a lot of choices in life where our values are a little bit in conflict with each other, and
mm-hmm.
and that's real. And something that I'm interested in is trying to just be a little bit more serious for myself about which are the most important values, because I think that that can then help be a little bit of guidance for those times that maybe there is something, I don't remember who it was about, who just said about saying yes or no to things. You know, there are times that you really do have to make difficult choices, and I think trying to sit with it a little bit when it's just about the values and not like applying it to something specific, then maybe makes it easier to make those decisions when they come up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are, and actually I think in week three, I think we go into talking more about values and when they conflict and how they conflict, and it does help us to make our choices consciously, knowing that we're weighing our values. And I think, I don't know how you feel about it. I think our values, tend to have different weights in, or priorities in certain given situations. I know that sounds odd. But it's something definitely worth exploring, for sure. And I think it's the difference, knowing what your values are, what you stand for, you know, what you would be willing to give up your life for. That changes your life when you understand these are so important to me that I wouldn't want to live without these values in my life. And so you begin to live authentically and mindfully. You know, when I started the I don't know if you know, I refer to myself as a recovering perfectionist. I talked about how perfection impacted my life so negatively. And one of the things about being a perfectionist is, for me anyway, was being a people pleaser. It was always really important to me in terms of how I was perceived by others. And I think back in the early days, I let that draw me into situations where I wasn't being driven by my values. I was being driven by, you know, do I want this person to like me or not? And I think when you come to understand that nobody can be 100% liked, and nobody, you know, and you don't like 100% of the people that you meet either. And the important thing is to not try to bend yourself into a pretzel, trying to be somebody that you think someone else wants you to be. That by being your own person, by being your authentic self, driven by your own value system, there are always going to be people that don't like you, and that leaves room for the people that are like you and who will like you because of your value system, knowing that they can depend on you to always be authentic and someone that they can count on. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense to me.
Does that have any impact on any of you in any way?
I think for me, I initially, when you first said being a perfectionist, I was thinking about, like, you know, a person who always performs their tasks as a perfectionist, and I am solidly not someone who suffers from that. And then when you talked about, and then I've been proud of that, right? Like, oh, I don't get hung up in, you know, total perfection. But then as you were talking about it being, you know, wanting to make sure that people liked you, I was like, oh, that's me. And that only, like, as an adult, when some people just inexplicably hated me, did I let go of that, right? And I was just finally like, you know what, I am who I am, and plenty, I align with plenty of people. So the idea that if you are, you have integrity about who you are, and then people can sort of count on you to be that, that you provide, like, a stability for people, resonates with me. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Took me a long time to learn that lesson. I'm so glad it came so easily to you.
That, oh, it didn't. Oh, no. Lots of anxiety.
Okay.
Around people, like, wanting people to like me. And, oh, no. I mean, yeah, no.
Okay.
But I recognize it in the way you just talked about it. I love that.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, what I found was, you know, the more because I was an executive director of a not-for-profit agency, I was very well known in my community, and I became a community leader as an advocate for you know, our client group, and also for not-for-profits in general, and I kind of became a spokesperson, and it just seemed like the more I was recognized and the more people applauded, the greater the pressure, because I felt like, oh, now I have to perform even better. You know, now I have to be even more perfect. And as much as, you know, being well known and well liked was something that I enjoyed, there was just also that pressure, that constant pressure to, you know, well, now what if I take a wrong step, or, you know, say something or do something, it's not as good as people expect of me, then what? You know, so I think the pressure came from internally as much as it did externally, or even more so probably. And I think, you know, just by having that constance, it was around that time that I started learning, actually, about personal values. And I was doing a lot of reading about self-healing because I was experiencing a lot of negative stress. And, you know, I started taking courses about purposeful living and so forth, and learning the value of having personal and universal values, and how important they were. And it really helped me change who I was.
It's interesting because I'm relating to this conversation a little bit in thinking back to a professional experience that I had where I, for a couple of years, actually oversaw my organization's human resources space. And I think that I came into it also like, you know, wanting to make everyone happy. Like
mm-hmm.
I even sort of remember saying that to someone who was sort of mentoring me in that during that time, you know, that I felt like I was doing a good job because I was keeping lots of people happy or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, yeah, then you're not doing your job. and kind of speaking to this, right, that, like, it actually was more important, and I feel like it was like a really complicated and sometimes painful sort of learning in that role to actually have to say no, like my
yeah.
job is actually to stand up and speak out for certain things, you know, and that's often going to actually upset that manager who isn't treating the person on their team the right way, or, you know, it became more important, I think, as I grew into that role, to realize that if you go about it trying to make everyone happy, then you're really not doing what you're supposed to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
But it's true of so many things in life. That's just one where I felt like I really, that lesson kind of smacks you.
Oh, for sure.
You can never make everyone in an organization happy. It's not possible.
No.
And it's a lot better when you can say, no, I'm coming from this value that, you know, is
mm-hmm.
held by the organization, or, you know, is just, you know, the right way to do things. And, you know, that then takes more courage sometimes, but
yeah,
it gets you to a much better place for everyone.
Yeah. Well, of course, for, you know, those type A people like I was, those overachievers, you know, and the it's so easy to become overwhelmed because you can't say no. You know, it's hard to say no if you don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. And it just took me such a long time to learn that lesson well. And it is a really important lesson, that not only is it okay to say no, it's necessary to be able to say no, and to say no without guilt. And, you know, sometimes that means giving yourself permission to not feel guilty about doing the right thing, like saying no.
This might sound kind of funny, but I kind of feel like I first got good at that when I became a parent. Because you have to say no.
Yes.
Right? It's like the right thing, and someone definitely gets mad at you, but it's for the right reasons, you know? And it
mm-hmm.
sounds kind of funny, but my husband never learned to say no. He hates it when our son is mad at him. But I have a strong relationship with my son, and we laugh about it because I've said no
yeah.
so many times, you know? Anyway.
Yeah, that's really true. I remember struggling with that with my kids. So eventually I got to the point that, and my husband wasn't a strong disciplinarian either. And so eventually I got to the point where I said to them as they got older, I mean, when they're little, it's easy to say no because you're doing it for their safety, to keep them, you know, safe from harm and whatnot. As they got older, they wanted to argue their position. And I was raised as a child, you know, you children are seen and not heard. And so my thoughts were never invited. And so I didn't want to be that kind of a parent. So I let my child, my kids, you know, share their thoughts if I made a rule or whatever. And then eventually I came to recognize, you know, and I said to them, okay, you know, I'll listen to you and ultimately I will make the decision. And you know, whether or not you like the decision, you have to go along with it because I'm the parent and, you know, I'm making decisions in your best interest. And so I always invited them to have their say. And sometimes I would change my mind. You know, sometimes I think, well, you know what, that's a valid position. And they've earned that right, and so I would change my mind. And then other times I wouldn't, and then say, well, you just have to live with it. And so, yeah, I think it's funny how, again, that people-pleasing, those some of those habits from childhood are really hard to, you know, they're hard to lose. Anybody interested in talking about the pandemic? I'm thinking about how we can use the pandemic to change our new normal for good.
That sounds interesting.
Can you say a little bit more?
Yeah. Well, it occurred to me we've been experiencing these enforced changes for almost a year now. And not all of the changes have been bad. And I'm wondering, you know, what are some values-driven changes that are possibilities for future change? Like some of the social some of the social lessons that we've learned, empathy, kindness, selflessness, decency, caring for others, what we were talking about earlier with Maslow's, you know, are we discovering an innate goodness in ourselves, do you think?
I didn't think about it that way. This is Donna. But I like that. I do. I think just if you look at mask wearing, wearing a mask so that you don't pass something to somebody else, and doing that consistently, thinking, I don't, and just in case I have something, I don't want to pass it to someone else, is a constant, for me, reminder. I never really thought about it like that in this way, but I am very concerned about passing something on to somebody else that could pass on to somebody else to cause them to be ill. So there was that. And then I would just say that I like how you put it, and I do think that we see more of what we, you know, what we look for. And but I have noticed on so many occasions, like when you are grateful for someone, like being especially at the beginning, not that I'm not grateful now, but when I would go to a grocery store, being so grateful for the person at the grocery store working, you know, knowing that they're some way in harm's length and looking at them more like part of the heroes. I mean, obviously the healthcare workers, of course, and many others, but in just going into work for some people was, you know, that allowed for us to be able to go to the store and get food. And definitely the kindness factor. But I also feel like I look for a lot of that and then acknowledge it, see it, and praise it, and just am grateful for it. Not to say that there's not a lot of that going on, but I think it's important to start looking at. The other thing that comes to mind, and I don't mean to steal the floor, but is being so much more mindful about washing my hands. I don't think I will go back to not washing my hands as much and as thoroughly as I have now. And I also think in general, most people, there's so many times that I've been at work when people would come in with a cold and or be sick and they were just like, well, I'm here anyway, you know, and really most of us would want them to go home now. They really don't have a choice. They can't be there. Or they really, you know, they really shouldn't be there because of what's going on. And I think that should have always been that way if somebody is ill. But what I also like about that is if somebody does have, but another positive in the federal government is that the use of telework and how much is getting done by people in positions that normally wouldn't then have been given the option of telework. So I think that's, I don't know if that's a value, but in a way, because people can still contribute if they're at home, and sometimes even more so, or, you know, not like they weren't contributing at work, but sometimes even better, more productivity, or like a nice mixture of both. So I do know that that's one thing moving forward that will change with it at the work environment, is that there'll be more options for people to telework because it, you know, it was successful during this time.
Yeah. Well, look at all the time that we spent sitting in our cars, you know, putting fumes out into the air, you know, commuting. And now we've come to realize we don't need to commute that much.
Geez, think about that, but that is very true.
Mm-hmm.
Or as much of it. Like maybe like a happy medium of, like I was saying, maybe people are working from home 2 days a week and going in 3 days a week into a job that was never before, was always every day you had to be in. And so there's some of the things that do need to be done in person, but then, you know, you save those for a day. And so I think that it, in the government, it will be, that will be a change moving forward. And that's a really good point about commuting time and resources that are spent driving, the gas, the time, the fumes.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And boy, have we ever come to appreciate those essential workers as heroes, the people that stock the grocery stores and that, you know, the cashiers. I mean, my God, and maybe is it time for there to be a living wage for all? You know, should there be people living below the poverty line when you consider how important even the cashiers at McDonald's windows are, they always seem to be filled. You know, people are utilizing their services and they've always been the lowest paid jobs, and yet obviously they're important to us.
I also think a lot of us, you know I've had this conversation with a couple of friends that, you know, I am fairly sure that I gave away more money last year than I ever have before because of just feeling really aware of how much need there was, you know, and it just putting your own reality in a little bit more perspective when you look at how many people around us in our communities were suffering so much, and then sort of not just saying like, oh, I can give them my latte, you know, and do something small, but like really looking more critically and saying like, what can I really do under this circumstance?
I mean, look at the people in food bank lines. Oh my God, food scarcity has become a term that I didn't, it's, no, they don't say scarcity, do they? Food insecurity. There's a word, there's a phrase I'd never heard before. It was food insecurity. Had you? Any of you?
I had, but I know someone who works on it, so.
Okay. So here are some of the, some of the things that I had thought about. I told you the social ones. Racism, looking at Black Lives Matter and what happened this summer, and I'm wondering, will people of color, will women, will the disabled ever see equity? Interesting how global news has changed, you know, because countries are sharing information, and so there's social media versus the newspapers or the news tellers. We're, you know, our world is shrinking. We're learning so much more about other countries and what they're doing and what's going on. Technologies. Oh my gosh. I mean, who ever heard of Zoom before 2020? I mean, I was aware of it. I was doing some webinars on Zoom, and all of a sudden it zoomed and all these other platforms for being able to communicate visually, and also just the fact that there's so much isolation that you know, it's helped somewhat in our social bonding. Because at least we can see one another, we can FaceTime, you know, our kids and grandkids and that kind of thing. And yet there have been new issues around privacy. And, you know, these big technologies, what are they doing with the information that they're collecting about us? And what are the ethics around that? Science and data. You know, there's a lot of scientific collaboration, especially medical collaboration. We're having this global pandemic. And so scientists from around the world, look at how quickly we got the vaccine. Something that would have taken years was accomplished in months because the global scientists started working together on a common cure. Can you imagine if all of the scientists in the world decided to put their heads together and work on a cure for cancer? I'm not sure that the pharmaceutical industry would go for that. Consumerism has changed. Our shopping habits have changed. I think we're buying less. We're learning that we don't need as much stuff. We're decluttering, you know, and we're looking more at environmental impacts, plastics and disposable plastics and the airline and travel industry. Will we ever travel abroad again? Conservation and the environment. We have to save our planet. So will we just evolve into new energy sources, you know, using solar and wind power? And gosh, now they can desalinate water and, you know, make salt water into drinking water. And who knows what new environmental processes will come forward. You know, we're taking the garbage out of the oceans, and not that it should be there in the first place, but it's just amazing to me how much new technology is driven by the environment. Time. How we're using time has really changed. I think. There's a focus on ourselves and how we spend our self time. I don't know about you guys, but we've been in lockdown for a while now, and I've never binge-watched so much television in my life. There's nothing to do that, you know, that we haven't done already. We've rearranged our cupboards. We've gone through baking brownies and all the rest of it, cookies and that kind of stuff. It's like we're kind of getting bored and tired of it, and so we're looking at self-care and self-improvement, and I wonder, do you think we'll slow down our pace, or do you think we'll pick it right back up again once we're out of this? And we've learned that we are adaptable and resilient, and so, you know, how will that change us once this is all over? So, you know, I think we have so many opportunities to change because I don't think our normal was a good normal. When you look at things like racism and the social inequities and the economy, you know, so maybe we have this opportunity to create a new and better society. So that's me just throwing all that out at you, because I had a while to think about this as I've been, you know, putting this course together, and I know I'm just asking you this question for the first time, but
I love this, because one of the things that I think is so exciting about this moment is that it shook some of the things that we took for granted or assumed or thought were norms. And then when that happens, then it's created some space for us to get more creative or to innovate and to think a little bit outside the box that we all were in together, even though now we're in Zoom boxes. But my dumb joke of the day. but truly, like, I think when some of your assumptions get put aside, it does open the space up to be a little bit more creative, and that is exciting.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, well, for those of us who are coaches, I think it's something that we've learned is to put a focus onto the positives and to try and stay away from the negative as much as possible. And so I know that it's something that I've trained myself to do, is look for the lessons, look for the learning, look for the positives. And, you know, I just found there to be so much positive. I just hope we don't fall back into old habits again, that we really do apply some of these lessons learned and make some real change. So, for homework over this next week, you're going to focus on thinking about who are you now? Who makes you what you are? What are your unique character traits and strengths, your skills and talents? And I've given you a bunch of exercises. Again, you don't have to do all of them, but I think it's important for you to ask yourselves the questions that I've put forward for you, and see, maybe there are some surprises about yourself that you haven't thought about before. For those of you who like to write, there are great opportunities there for for writing, you know, what would it be like for you if you could have a perfect day or a perfect birthday, a perfect holiday, a perfect weekend or marriage? Ask 10 friends to write down 3 things they admire about you. Write down 100 things that you would like to be, do, or have. One of my favorites is writing a letter to yourself from your 90-year-old self and have it be fully sensory. You know, what are you? Where are you sitting? What are you looking at? What are you tasting, touching, smelling? When you look back on your life, what are you proud of? What, you know, just reviewing some of your life's wins and challenges. And then there's an opportunity for you to put together a list of your values. I've included a values list of, I think there's over 230 personal core values, and you can put them into categories and maybe choose your, prioritize, you know, these are my most important, these are my least important. And I've given you an example of my personal values and code of ethics. So if that's any use to you. So what are your thoughts? Any light bulbs for anyone today after our discussion?
I think, this is Joanne, I think that I was struck by how, when you were talking about the impact of the coronavirus lockdown on mm-hmm. everyone, that intellectually I share everything you said. You know, I got together with some friends I hadn't seen in a long time, and I marveled at how unspoken it was that we would be in the backyard, we would all wear masks, no one even had to say that. We just knew because we're part of the human race right now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But when you were talking, the reason I didn't respond was I was feeling so, these sort of negative thoughts about, like, we all think, sounds like, similarly, but I get so bummed out about the folks who don't wear a mask, who think it's mm. political, or, and all of that. So I don't know how to marry the ideal mm. with the reality, I guess, you know, and I guess maybe part of that answer is, in taking this course, right? Like, as I figure out my purpose and I'm able to articulate it and model the behavior that I think is important, that is the legacy that I can leave, and that's what I can do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's how I feel, too, is we can only, you know, we're one person, and it's not like we can't stand by and do nothing. And as long as we do something, then, and if that's modeling, you know, the kind of behavior we'd like to see from the world, then that's something. And I think that's something we can be proud of.
Yeah, thank you.
Sure. Well, thank you all. I know it's a small group today, and so I've been asking a lot of you because you've been having to share, everything. I'm looking forward to having the whole group together next week, and look forward to hearing how you felt doing your week 2 homework, so we can exchange some more thoughts and feelings then. Thank you again.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you.
Take care, everybody. Okay. Yeah, it was great chatting with you. Bye-bye.